ever seen an angel shark, Niall or Eric? Have
no.
you ever seen an
no,
angel
no,
shark?
No, no.
Any idea what it is?
It's a shark that looks like an angel.
Well, I don't know exactly. But I know that Richard Collins was talking to Ross O'Neill in what is being described as a groundbreaking development for marine conservation in Ireland. Two rare angel sharks have been successfully tagged and released by scientists from the Marine Institute in Tralee Bay in County Kerry. Ross O'Neill is a marine scientist at the Fisheries Ecosystems Advisory Service in Mayo, and he spoke with Richard earlier.
Angel shark is a flattened shark. It grows up to about 2 metres long. The heaviest one ever caught was about 80 kilos. They have very, very small little eyes in their head. They are incredibly camouflaged on their back, so they're kind of brown with black mottling every so often, and their skin is extremely rough. Their teeth are fearsome. They would absolutely latch onto your hand and not let go in any way, shape or form. There's been some stuff in the text from, is it the late 19th century? I think the late 1800s or something, where someone has described an angel shark actually taking a bite out of the handle, the wooden handle of a hammer on board a boat. Such as the pressure in their jaws as well. So they're absolutely fierce, and you do not want to be getting your hands anywhere near their mouth at all.
I remember back in the early 50s, my father took me to Dingle, where on the pier he showed me a fish which the fisherman described as a monkfish. Was that an angel shark, and was I lucky to see it?
Well, I suppose there's a bit of confusion around the use of the term monkfish these days, because people would associate it with what you typically get in a restaurant. That actually is... I suppose it's a common name given to the anglerfish that we eat. But yes, in Kerry and in certain parts of Ireland, the angel shark was colloquially known as a monkfish. And you probably did see one. You were probably fortunate enough to see one. But back then, you wouldn't have been considered fortunate. It would have just been probably par for the course. But today, of course, that's very much different.
But it wasn't for human consumption back then. I understand that they used it for crab bait or something like that. But that somebody in California in the 70s hit on the idea of marketing angelfish. Is this the history?
It would have been eaten in certain parts of the world, all right, but you know, there was never really much of a market for it here. You know, that's not what has really led to its decline. Thankfully, there was no commercial eating market really for angel shark back in the day. It probably would have expedited its rapid decline more so than it has been. It's been an unfortunate victim, unfortunately, of just being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
And what is that place? It likes sandy beaches, I believe. Surely it should be safe there.
It's an unfortunate victim of its own natural behaviour. It likes to. It's an ambush predator. It buries itself typically in shallow waters, up to about 150 metres depth. We believe it is kind of its kind of typical range, but quite commonly it's found inshore in very shallow waters, and it'll bury itself in sand or in mud. And there it will wait, submerged and camouflaged. And when something opportunistic swims by, it will rise up out of the sand very quickly and it will consume it. But as a result of this, it's staying in areas. So these sandy, muddy bottoms, they're also susceptible to fishing gear, trawling in particular. And as a result, they get caught accidentally by bycatch. On top of that also, you have things such as habitat degradation. So we have the loss of seagrass beds just through, I suppose, things such as climate change bringing worse storms and ripping these beds apart, or through, we'll say, urbanisation and development of seafront areas, you know, putting in hotels like in the Mediterranean. A lot of these sandy beaches are now having people on them and stuff, and it pushes the fish further and further from where it used to live. And as a result, they become much more vulnerable.
Now, it's an extraordinary looking fish. There was a sequence on RTE a while back showing children playing in shallow water and an angel shark swimming around them, quite close, nonchalantly, not being frightened of them, nor were they frightened of it. For a thing with the mouth that it has and the terrible teeth it has, that was a strange video.
The ironic thing, I suppose, about that video is that We've been working for the last 2 years down in Tralee Bay to try and tag some of these animals. And that video you're referring to was actually taken outside our headquarters in Galway, which was obviously, you know, the universe kind of really sticking the knife in the in our sides at the time. Now, thankfully, we've come up trumps since. But it was in quite shallow waters. It seemed quite undisturbed by everybody else. But you are right. They do have quite a set of teeth, which I had a look at myself there. And of all the different species that I've been fortunate to work with over the years, they're by far the most least agreeable to being taken out of the water and being handled and tagged. So yeah, it was an interesting experience.
Now, you tagged two. You put very complex modern tags on them. Could you describe these tags and what you hope to get back from them?
So the two animals that we tagged, we're extremely fortunate, first of all, to be there. We've had great cooperation with the fishermen in the area. We're running a number of different research streams, I suppose, down in Tralee Bay. And the commercial fishermen down there have been extremely, you know, welcoming and extremely helpful in terms of getting us these fish. We just so happened to be on board one of these boats as it was fishing in an area where in the past they have caught angel shark as bycatch, accidental bycatch. And on the day in question, we were there, and yeah, a fine size male of 124 centimetres was caught, and he was in fantastic condition. And so we just laid out all of our equipment and we got tagging the fish. So typically what we do is we allow the fish to recover for a while in an aerated tank with plenty of fresh water going through it, and then we take it out, we cover its eyes, and that just kind of makes it relax a bit more, and we get water flowing across the gills. And then we take a number of measurements of the fish. So we might take the fish's weight, its length, its sex, whether it's male or female, and we take a small sample of tissue for genetics. And then on top of that, we put two different types of tags into the angel sharks. We first of all put just identification tags. These are just small little plastic tags that go into the fish. We put two of these into each fish, and that's just in case one of them gets lost, there'll always be another one there. So if someone does recapture it, they'll be able to there will be a tag still present there for them to report it to us. I suppose the main thing we put into it is a telemetry tag called a pop-off satellite archival tag, or PSAT for short. These tags would be the creme de la creme of telemetry equipment, and they're only reserved for the most endangered or most, shall we say, special species. You know, there's a considerable cost involved in them, but that's because the technology in them is quite impressive. The tag is affixed to the back of the fish via a tether, or we have custom designed these kind of almost saddles that sit on the back of the fish, and the tag then is streamed behind the fish as the fish swims. The tag stays on the fish for up to 12 months after the fish is released back in the water, at which time the tag will detach automatically from the fish and float to the surface no matter where in the world it is. And then the beauty of this is that it transmits data for where the fish has been for the previous year via satellite network. So we actually never have to get the tag back to get information. If we physically do get the tag back, we can get a lot more information. But even if we don't, we can build up a fantastic picture as to where these animals go. And the way that it works is that the tag records things such as light, such as temperature, and water depth as well. It transmits then all this data over satellite and allows us then to model where that fish might have swam to in its period from being released and the tag coming off it.
You sound as if it's a certainty that this tag will float to the surface sooner or later, or after a year or whatever. Is there any certainty that you'll get it back, or is this a lottery?
So that's a good point to make. We've used coming up, I'd say, nearly 200 of these types of tags in recent years. We've deployed them from everything from sea bass all the way up to cod and even massive bluefin tuna, and we've had quite a good success rate. And you know, we've travelled to different parts of the world. We've travelled down to Spain, up to the Outer Hebrides in Scotland physically to get them back, but we've also had tags recovered for us from Algeria, from the north of Norway. So these things are amazing. If they're predated upon and the fish dies, the tag actually has inbuilt software to say if the fish is at a current depth for a certain period of time, it will automatically release itself and float to the surface. So we do get the tag back in some way, shape or form, even if that the unfortunate thing does happen to the fish.
And if it floats up prematurely because the fish dies or whatever, it'll still send you back a message. You won't have to wait the year, will it?
Typically, no. It's actually up to the user to depend on what settings you can put it onto. So yeah, what we have it set for is, because of the sedentary nature of the angel shark, we have it set so that even if the fish does pass away within the year, the tag will actually remain on the fish. Because were we to set the, we'll say it's called a mortality switch, were we to set the mortality switch onto the tag and turn it on, even if the angel shark is sitting in the same spot for 2 days or 3 days, which it could likely do, the tag will think that the fish has deceased and release itself. So we had to switch that off. But if the tag does come off the fish and the fish has been dead for a considerable period of time, once we run the data through the models, we'll be able to tell straight away whether the fish died, because we can just see whether track stopped and deduce from that as to when actually the time of mortality was.
Now, angel sharks are in trouble. There are many species, I think about 20 or something in the world. Are they all in trouble, and how serious is this?
Yeah, sharks in general are in trouble all over the world. The vast majority of elasmobranch or shark species would be in trouble. And the main reason for that is it's their reproductive strategy. So if you have something like a cod or a haddock, when they're reproducing, they're releasing millions upon millions of eggs into the water column with the hope that some will survive. With sharks, the numbers are much, much lower. So, for example, the angel shark might only give birth to 15 to 20 live pups. So when you compare that to millions of cod eggs, you know, it's a much, much lower chance of survival, if you know, in terms of their robustness if something was to happen to them. And all over the world, they're in pretty poor shape. So it's up to us to kind of start to get serious about these things and you know, kind of start to put in measures to ensure that we're not going to lose these animals. In particular, the angel shark that we're dealing with, Squatina squatina is its Latin name, it's on the IUCN red list for endangered animals. So it's up there with great white sharks and everything like that. So this is a critically endangered animal.
So after how many years does a female start to produce her 15 pups? Is there a big delay? Does it have to live a very long time to reach breeding age? And then it only produces 15 pups, and they have to survive for a similar long period of time in the cutthroat conditions of the sea. Is this the model? The model is that they aren't able to survive long enough to breed.
Yeah, you've exactly hit the nail on the head. You're talking for males in particular, you're talking maybe 8 to 12 years before they start to reach sexual maturity. And it's estimated, you know, they're going to be at a size of nearly 1.5 meters before they're sexually mature. So they're quite large fish by that time, but they have to survive exactly to that period as well. And they have to get into their mating grounds, and they have to successfully reproduce as well within that period, all while avoiding all these, you know, anthropogenic factors. And then you have added to that, you have their actual reproductive kind of cycle. Angel sharks, we believe, they're not actually annual. You know, they don't reproduce annually. It might only be every 2 or 3 years that they do this. So that further complicates things as well and makes them even more vulnerable to collapse.
So they have to live a very long time if they are to survive, if the species is to survive. Now, where do they breed on these sandy places that they live in?
Well, that's the question we're looking to find out. We have heard anecdotally that there has been a couple of juveniles in recent years spotted in Inner Tralee, and that in itself is fantastic news. You know, it is hopeful signs of green shoots of good stuff to come. The tags, like I said, will remain on for a year, and we're hoping that we'll see some kind of migration pattern. Hopefully, you know, maybe the ones that we tagged this year, they might come back into the bay again, and our hope is obviously to add to these two fish and put more tags out and see, you know, can we build up some kind of idea, some kind of a pattern. I suppose we're unique in this respect in that we're down here in Tralee, you know, at the moment, and we're doing this, and this is, I suppose, one of their last strongholds. But outside of Ireland, there's a few in the Azores, in the Canary Islands, very patchy in the Mediterranean still, and then there's some in Cardigan Bay in Wales. You know, how interlinked are these islands of fish? You know, is there one big single stock of of angel shark in this entire Northeast Atlantic area, or are they all separate stocks? You know, because that has huge implications then for how they're managed also.
But what's your suspicion, this islandisation where you've isolated pockets and there's limited cross-fertilisation genetically, is this your gut feeling or do you think that they probably migrate a lot? If they're sandy bottom fish, then migrating doesn't seem a good option. There's not going to be a sandy beach all the way to the Azores or wherever. You're going to be limited to where there are sandy beaches, which seems to curtail where you go.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, if you look at some of the, let's say, the fish species, for example, bass, once the eggs are released into the water, they have a larval dispersal phase, which just essentially means that these small juvenile fish are dispersed over a huge area carried by currents. So you could have fish, you know, south of Wexford, out 60 miles, 70 miles, but they could be ending up in estuaries in, you know, the Bristol Channel over in the UK, and also then in Wexford, and maybe up towards Wicklow and down in Kerry. So you would have one essential giant genetic stock, but because of the nature of reproduction of the angel shark, you'd have to suspect almost that they either keep to themselves within these areas or that there has to be some kind of giant angel shark aggregation somewhere. But this is the thing, no one has ever come across that behavior before, so it's probably more likely it's the former, that they're essentially isolated stocks from each other. And as I said already, like, you know, that has a huge impact on how they're managed, because you essentially have these isolated, potentially genetically unique stocks separated from each other. To avoid collapse then of these local stocks, you have to take very stringent measures to ensure that they're surviving locally.
Now, if you do find where they're breeding, can you set up a captive breeding program? Can you collect eggs and raise them artificially to a certain stage and then release? But as they do with salmon, as they do with lots of things, is this a possible option? It's probably way off in the future, but do you think that's a possibility?
So the reproductive nature of the angel shark is that it's called ovoviviparous, which means that essentially the egg is fertilised within the female and the egg hatches and grows within the female, and then the female gives birth to live young pups about 9 to 12 inches long each. So unlike salmon, where we could extract eggs and grow them up, we're actually relying on the female to give birth to live young. So unfortunately, I don't think that's really an option at the moment. The best, I think, approach we can do, you know, is actually, you know, enforcing the measures that are in place there already. And also, I suppose, the downstream of all this kind of work is, you know, looking towards 2030 and the government's pledge to have 30% of our waters designated as marine protected areas. It's about putting these marine protected areas in the right places. And, you know, the kind of tagging work we're going to do here, hopefully, will identify these putative spawning areas or mating areas or nursery areas, or whatever way you want to look at it, for the angel shark. And that will allow us then maybe to spatially, you know, designate this area as a marine protected area for angel sharks, and allow us then to bring specialist measures in to ensure that they're, you know, going to be looked after, and hopefully build upon, you know, some of the success we've had down there, and the stock can start the slow road back to recovery.
So you could cordon off whole sections, say, of Tralee Bay, sandy sections, and forbid bottom trawling or anything like that. And this might be a solution. If we can set up enough of these reserves in the right places, it may be possible to save this unfortunate animal.
Yeah, for example, so We one of the things we could do is, I suppose, rather than excluding commercial fishing activity altogether from an area, we could look at the types of gear used. So, for example, gear that would have negligible impacts, such as potting, which has, you know, very, very little bycatch, that might be allowed in certain areas. But things such as, exactly like you mentioned, trawling and all that kind of mobile kind of gear, that might be restricted from certain areas and allow us then to put some kind of spatial measures together. But I think at this stage, you know, it's important to stress as well that we ourselves can't do this. It has to be a buy-in from everybody, from community groups and from, you know, the industry in particular. And that's what's been, I suppose, so heartening from our point of view so far, is that the industry have been really, really, you know, behind this and stuff, and they've been really helpful. So it's great that everybody has a buy-in into it.
Well, Ross, it's a nail-biting time for you, waiting for the things to pop up, but wish you the best on this one. It's very important that you succeed.
Thank you very much, Richard. Much appreciated.
As always, you can find more details by visiting our website, rte.ie/Mooney. A very comprehensive rundown of every item featured on each edition of Mooney Goes Wild, and a very extensive archive, lots for you to discover there, including our documentaries section, which features all of the documentaries from our Nature on One series and some that date back even before we began Nature on One 2 years ago. Eric Dempsey's documentary about the white-tailed prominent is there, as he said himself, missing for over 70 years, believed extinct, and that it wasn't. It was there all the time. Or was it? In South Kerry. Have a listen to it. rte.ie/Mooney. My thanks to Eric Dempsey, to Richard Collins and Niall Hatch. Not forgetting our researcher, the fantastic Michelle Brown. We'll do it all again next week at the same time. Until then, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.